welcome to episode 57 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. I am Erin Campbell. With me tonight is a very special guest from our neighbors to the north. He is one-fourth of the A-Team podcast. He is the man behind Mana Deprived, and he's also the star of all of my Mulan fantasies. Hello, Carr Young Tom.
How's it going, Erin? Really excited to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited too. So, I do have a quick question though. So, Carr Young Tom, now I know you're Asian. Which variation of Asian are you?
So I was born here, so I'm Canadian, but my parents come from Hong Kong. So, for those of you wondering what type of Chinese I speak Cantonese.
Okay.
And speak it fairly fluently with my parents. So,
okay.
If people want to talk Chinese with me, if they see me at some tournament, feel free to start going at it. And I just wanted to quickly mention before I forget that I'm glad that you got my real name in English correct.
Really?
In one shot. And because usually actually my mom does not think it's supposed to be pronounced that way. I pronounce it Carr Young Tom.
Okay.
Carr as in, you know, a car.
Yeah.
Young as in the opposite of old, but it's not spelled that way. And I think my mom always thought it should be Carr Young Tom.
Okay.
Which is closer to the Chinese pronunciation, but I always liked Young more because it's an English word. So I always went with that. My mom has given up correcting me on that.
I was just about to ask you that because I know that we all affectionately know you as KYT. And I mm-hmm. wondered, you know, what do your parents call you? You know, do they call you? Have they given in to that or do they refer to you by one of your names?
My mom, most in Chinese, I think they usually call people sometimes by the last character.
Okay.
So in my case, it would just be Young in this case in Chinese, which is very weird actually when I think about it since it's not. Like, you would expect, like, in English, it's like, hey, Carr. Carr would be a correct way. No one's going to call me Young, like, the second part of my first name. That makes absolutely no sense. But in Chinese, it makes 100% sense.
See, I actually thought it would have been the opposite. I thought they would have called you Tom. I didn't even consider Carr, and I didn't consider Young, but I was like, maybe your name would just be Tom. Like, that's a pretty common thing, you know?
Right. But Tom is something I do get a lot.
Okay.
When I'm signing up to anything, they just assume that it's my first name and Carr Young is just some weird family name that I have. I don't know. But Tom was not apparently the correct spelling for my Chinese name. So you hear a lot of people call it Tam. You hear a lot of people call it Hum. And those are actually the more correct ways of when they immigrated, I guess, when my grandparents immigrated, but they heard my grandfather say Tom, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we went with that and I'm actually happy with that. Cause like my full name is just three English words stuck together.
It kind of makes me just want to throw together three random words myself. Like, let's just go through Google and be like, I am, you know, dog, snake, water. Let's go with that, you know? So,
yeah. Well, at least my mind kept the oriental feel for it. It's like, you can't mistake Carr Young with just like, you know, an American, like a bunch of American words strung together, like dog, cat, bus or something.
Well, if we spelled it differently, we could, and then they would probably think you're just dyslexic, you know?
That's possible, yes.
It's entirely possible. Well, no matter how we say your name, I'm really glad that you're here. So I will probably just call you KYT through the rest of the show, if that's okay.
No problem.
Okay.
That's
So let's get started. So when I was doing some research on you, like I usually do, I was very surprised to find out that you actually started off blogging about poker and then you gave that up to start writing about Magic. And usually it's the other way around. Like, you see people who have been playing Magic for a while, blogging about Magic for a while, and then they move on to poker. What made you decide that you wanted to do things the opposite way?
So I think people who do it that way do it for monetary reasons. They gain success from Magic, they develop these skills, these card playing skills that transfer very well to poker, and poker is just more ludicrous, more lucrative, I said.
It is ludicrous too, trust me.
In making more money, like you can win you win a pro tour, it's 40,000, I believe still. And in poker, if you win the WSOP, it's millions. So there is no comparison. And I think that's why people naturally move on, especially those that do not, a lot of these Magic players who do not have a career outside of Magic, they just gravitate to poker because, you know, you don't really need a degree, just go in and gamble. For me, this transition was more for me to find a game that was more community-based. When it comes to poker, you're very much an individual. You sit in a room. If you're an online poker pro, you sit in your own room and you're playing thousands of tables at the same time, and it becomes very robotic, and you don't really interact with your opponents. You're just like, fold, push all in here, bet this, bet that. And I was looking for a game where I can just grow a community, like a place to hang out every week. And that's the reason why I slowly moved away from chess, because all my friends stopped playing it. And poker, I felt I was going to be alone on my journey to poker mastery, so that didn't seem fun. But Magic, I mean, it's the game that, for some reason, my friends just always come back to it. And at FNM, there's always friends that are still playing the game. So that was the key. I wasn't trying to find the game that would make me the most money. I was trying to find the game that I could have the most friends around, like, to play with and enjoy myself. So Magic became it.
Interesting. And I kind of feel the same way. Like, I played World of Warcraft for a really long time, and I played that for about 6 years. And I kind of felt the same way you did, KYT, where I felt like I was very much on my own. And I was raiding with people and I was playing with people, but I really felt like I had become sort of socially stunted in the meantime, where, you know, when your only interactions with people are while you're wearing a headset, you know, you don't have to look people in the eye. You know, you can say terrible things about them, and as long as you're not holding your push to talk key, you're fine. And I didn't realize how I had sort of, you know, become awkward socially until I started going to Magic events, and I was like, oh shit, I have to like deal with people, like, what is this? And there was a good 6 months or so where I really had to look at myself and just realize how my social skills had atrophied, because I'd been playing a game like that for a while. And that's part of why I wanted to go back to Magic, was I wanted people, and people that I could see and touch and hear, and they're real, and I can go visit them if I want to, and we're not bound by a cord and a screen, and it just felt more real, and it felt really good. So I can relate to you wanting just community for once.
I think WoW is one of the few exceptions to me in terms of longevity. Mm-hmm. You would, because in some of these games, like when I played Diablo 2 or a bunch of other games in the past, you know, those reached their peak after at their peak for a year, 2 years, 3 years tops. And then these friendships you build are just gone. They just move on to other games because with a few exceptions, I've made really close friends in some games and have kept in touch with them, but usually they move on to something else and you move on to another game and you don't talk to these people as much. And that's why Magic I gravitate towards more, because it's been around for so long and I've played it, like, people I've played against in high school, you know, I've played like against that person last week, so, and are still friends with them. So this is like crazy to me. So Magic was an easy first choice for me when it came down to picking a game to concentrate on.
Mm-hmm. And then Mana Deprived started out as more of a personal blog. Like, it was just you, correct?
Yeah, it was me.
Okay.
It was
just me. There's nothing wrong with that. And then eventually you took the site into more of a community site. So what made you want to go in that direction?
So I think I was always like, we all blog or write content. I feel most of us, if not all of us, do it. Because we want people to read it. We want people to comment on it. We want people to share it. And it just feels good when you have something that you wrote that people like and that people shared. And before Mana Deprived, right before it, I never mentioned this on any interview that I've done.
Oh, my.
But I had a site that I created. It was such a – I don't even know why I thought about this, but the site was called Barrage Cafe, and it was basically a network of blogs that my friends – that I got my friends to write about. Like, some would be about Magic, some would be about poker, some would be about cooking or restaurant reviews, and hence the word barrage, because it was like a barrage of, of topics thrown at you. And it ended up being that I was like the only one updating my section of the network. And I have no idea why I thought about that. So it obviously failed, and no one really cared. Like, it didn't make sense. The whole concept made no sense whatsoever. But that's just to say that I've always wanted to blog. I've always wanted to put my ideas out there. So MadPrive was something like that. And it just, I think, I can't even remember the exact details of how it went from just me to many people. I just felt there was a gap in Canadian Magic content. No one was doing it. Like, you had LSV, PV, all these Channel Fireball guys, Jerry Thompson, all these Americans that were putting their content out there, and there was nothing much about Canadian pros. Like, you didn't know who the best Canadian players were. You knew nothing. So I just set out to change that, and by being the only one, naturally the best players in Canada just like started, you know, reading up on me or looking me up and like, who is this KYT guy? Like, why does he think he's good enough to write about this game? So I just like started pushing content, and Alex Hain, who is someone that I actually first met a long time ago, as like we were both little kids at a chess tournament, we met and I just recognized the name, saw him again at a Zendikar pre-release, and he's heard about my efforts, my website, and he thought it was a great idea and wanted to help out. So he was one of the first editors, one of the first contributors even to Man Deprived. And with him on board, because he was, at that time, before winning the Pro Tour, he was still one of the more well-respected players in the local area. So with him on board, other people were like, whoa, let's all jump in. So I got more and more submissions, more recognition. And next thing you know, Mike Flores wanted to do like a video series with me. Wow. Because I had top eighted and wrote a report about how I top eighted with his deck list. So he talked a lot about me on Twitter. So next thing you know, like Mana Deprived became like a real thing. But was it one of my goals? I mean, I obviously wanted to grow my blog into something. Everyone wants to make the little thing that they create into something big. So I'm not sure if it was like in the cards to be like, yo, Mike, you know, talk about me to everyone and everything. So it all went pretty fast. Mm-hmm. It's all a blur right now to me, how it all happened and how I captivated all these players to be on my team. So, but I'm glad I was able to do that. Mm-hmm.
Now, you brought up something about, and Mana Deprived is known for being the home for Canadian Magic. And I like the way that you found your niche. Like you said, you realized that there was, you know, a hole, there was something missing, and there was something that nobody was doing. And so you chose to highlight, you know, the Canadian scene. How is the Canadian Magic scene different from the American scene?
I think the American, I hate to
be honest,
anti-American, but I think everyone knows that the Americans have the advantage of just having more tournaments, at least important tournaments, PTQs, GPs. They have more, and that's why like Americans generally have more Planeswalker points, etc. And so I think that's the big difference, and that's why you don't hear about you know, like our Jerry Thompson or our Todd Anderson or our Conley Woods, because we have less opportunity to expose ourselves to the public. You know, the SCG series is in the US, and if I was an American, I would just travel to a bunch of them because it's a lot cheaper to travel within the US than within Canada. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the major advantage of being an American. And I would have, as a Magic player, you know, that would be something I would move to the US and be like, you know, I have all this Magic to play. It's awesome. So, but Canada has come a long way in growing the game. And I just hope that it's never going to become close, because let's be honest, the U.S. is the home of Wizards. Mm-hmm. But I hope one day we'll get there where we do get more, as many GPs or as many PTQs up north, and allow a lot more players to qualify, give a lot more players up here a chance to get on the Pro Tour. Mm-hmm.
Has that ever been something that's discouraged you a little bit? Because I know that, you know, you're certainly trying for the pro tour, and we'll talk about that a little later. But, you know, when you're looking at the schedules and you're looking at the people, you know, you're just looking at everything out there, and you realize, you know, we don't have these things, and I'm only able to go to so many things. And I have heard, you know, people from England and other countries talk about how difficult it is. Is that something you've ever felt like has maybe kept you down, or that has made you not want to try for that anymore?
It certainly has, and if it weren't for this successful website, I don't know how I would feel about being competitive. But I can understand, like, I guess Canada is in a much better position than a lot of the countries, a lot of the players from these countries that you talk about, in terms of the amount of important Magic tournaments that we can travel to. But it has discouraged me. Like, I'd love to go to all these GPs in the U.S. Like, If there's ever GP Orlando again, I'd love to be able to travel that, like GP Vegas. There's GP Detroit coming up. There's GP Washington. And I just, like, these are events that I'd really love to go to if they, you know, if it didn't kill my bank account, mm-hmm. just traveling to one of them. So it is discouraging, and it's discouraging. I went down to GP Providence, finished fifth with my team. Was able to give myself 3 pro points.
Nice.
And I do want to get more, but it's discouraging to see other people being able to climb the ladder because they're able to go to more events, and me being stuck at 3 because I just can't afford to do that. So it is discouraging. So at the same time, there are enough PTQs locally in Montreal, which is one of the best places to be a Magic player in the country. So I can't complain about that.
Mm-hmm. Is the Canadian Magic scene, in terms of the community, is it different than the American scene at all?
I don't want to say anything because I don't know about the American scene.
Okay.
I just feel like here, the U.S., there's so many states. Mm-hmm. And so here, I think you just know who all the ringers are, and you know, if you know who you can talk to, I think it feels
more insular. Closer.
Yeah, in a way. Maybe it's just me, since I'm in touch with a lot of people in the West, like Western Canada, like Alberta. Mm-hmm. But like on top of my head, I can just name like who the best players in Ontario are, who the best players in Quebec are. And I couldn't tell you who the top players in every state of the U.S. is. Mm-hmm. But here we do. We even have, like, it's so close that we even have our personal, like, top 50 top Canadian players. Mm. Like, that's how short the list is, and how much people know each other to be able to rate each other like that. And which is very interesting. It's a list that Alex Hayne has on his iPhone, and it's very funny because he goes to events, he shows it to people, and you're allowed to make. He gives the person. He's allowed to switch the spots of 2 players, like swap them
on his list, or in the actual tournament pairings, or
like on his list.
Okay.
So
okay.
Let's say you think he shows you his top 50 and you think this guy deserves to be number one. So you swap number 5 with number 1, and now they're swapped. And the idea is that, like, hopefully after many of these swaps, there's like some sort of consensus. Like you have a list that's like right. somewhat respected by most people in Canada, but it's been pretty hilarious, especially with some people's egos being broken, to see them like being really low on the list or not even on the list.
Where
like,
are you what? On the list?
last I checked, I know I'm at least in the top 30, I think, so that's pretty good.
Okay. Do I need to send a letter of recommendation, or
maybe you can ask for his iPhone and you can do the swap when you see him.
Maybe it'll be like Charlie's Angels, where I'll have like Genisodes pull up and she'll be like the Drew Barrymore, and you know, she'll unbutton her suit and with the fan blowing in her hair, and I'll be the Lucy Liu at the side of the car, like stealing the iPhone, and it'll be clandestine. It'll be awesome.
That's the awesome thing about the list, because if you make me number one, and obviously I don't deserve to be the number one, then the next person is just going to switch me, like bump me back way down. So maybe even lower because they feel insulted that I was even number one at any time.
But you will have had a taste of being number one, and that's what counts.
Right. Let's shoot this guy back to 50. But that's, I think that's, you brought up, you helped me think of, like, that's the most, one of the more unique things about our community. We know, you know, I know most of the people that are considered top 50 in the country. I can't, and are friends with them. I can't say the same about the U.S. I can't even name, like, people that aren't, like, writers or just like the same Channel Fireball guys. Like, I can't name all those obscure people that are really good, but that no one knows about. But here, like, all the Canadians know all the great players that haven't made a huge breakthrough yet. Mm-hmm. So, like, I knew about John Stern before he won GP Atlantic City. I knew about Alex Hayne before he won Pro Tour, Avison Restored. And I know a bunch of players that wouldn't surprise me if they ended up winning a big event.
Very cool. Now, your site has grown to the point now where you do sponsor your own series of events, the MDSS. So tell me a little bit about that.
So the MDSS is sponsored by my sponsor, Face-to-Face Games, who you know, are awesome enough to use my brand name as the name of the tournament series. And I do see benefits to doing that as well, because I'm not a card store. I don't sell cards. So people across the country are more likely to support something like that, something that's going to push, trying to push Canadian Magic to the next level, is accepting of many different vendors. Depending on where we go, like, we will ask different vendors to come vend at our events. It's not like, you know, Face-to-Face Games only, other people get the hell out. Mm-hmm. So it's very much trying to push the envelope in terms of pushing Canadian Magic. And it's something that right now is still very, very small. It's nowhere close to the SCG series. We're probably, like, at the stage where people didn't really care about the SCG. Like, I think when it first started, it was just, like, these small events that only had written coverage, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And so we're at that really early stage where we just had our biggest tournament last month, which was a 5K, whereas SCG is giving way more money than that at this point. And TCG Player has held many 5Ks, but we just held our first. So we're taking baby steps, and we're trying to make sure we give different areas in Canada that don't regularly get high-level competitive tournaments, we give them a chance. So we're traveling to Saskatchewan in a few months, and that's a place that, you know, I've never been, and I've never heard of any Magic. I don't actually know a Magic player that lives there.
Really?
But because of GP Calgary, a lot of people went to Calgary and from Saskatchewan and talked about how there's, like, a booming community there. And I guess the guys at Face-to-Face Games wanted to give it a shot. So props to them for wanting to help those guys out and give them something to look forward to, mm-hmm. which is what our series is about. We're going to try to hit every pocket in Canada that we can, obviously without breaking Face-to-Face Games' bank account.
It sounds like you're looking to turn, you know, your events into Canada's version of the TCG Player events and the Star City Games events. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I think we want to do that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come up to me and complain about how I definitely need to get live coverage, etc. But again, I personally don't sponsor the event. Mm-hmm. I lent my name out there, and we all know that, at least us, like me, people like me know that the streaming, everything, it's just an additional plus.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring money into the sponsors, in my opinion. It's just like sponsoring teams for pro tours, because the people who buy the most cards are not these pro tournament players that watch streams, that watch pro tour coverage. They're like the casuals, mm-hmm. right? So streaming isn't exactly profitable, because the bulk of people who are going to buy online cards are these casual players or EDH players. So by doing so, you're not really, you're just adding more costs to these tournaments that, you know, this tournament series, we're just trying to start out. We're just trying to see the response from the players, if people actually want these things before taking it to the next step. But do we want to do that? Do we want to be Canada's version of the SCG series and the TCG player tournaments? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that we can get there in maybe in a year or two, that would be awesome.
That would be. I think you're also on the right track with scaling back on the streaming right now, because aside from the streaming being profitable, there's just the maintenance of it, where it's like, you know, having to get the streaming to work, and then, you know, having to, you know, everything that comes along with that. You know, it's like, you know, there are people who, there was a Wizards event happening this weekend, and there was so much of it's choppy and it's laggy, and, you know, I can't see their hands, and that's a whole other can of worms. So I think you've got the right idea with making sure that you have all of your other ducks in a row, and then having these sort of splurges where it's like, okay, we have the tournament itself figured out. Now we're going to focus on the feature matches. Now we're going to focus on the articles and promoting players. And I think you have your priorities set with that. That's a good idea.
And I think the whole streaming thing was just like lucky. The Rashad Miller just happened to start GG's Live, and SCG picked them up. And then people were complaining that Wizards didn't have coverage for GPs and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, Wizards themselves did not have streaming for a long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they picked them up. So if Wizards didn't have streaming for a while, you know, we're going to take it easy as well and do it when the time is right.
Yeah, that's good. So speaking of competitive play, you've been very open about the fact that you have Pro Tour aspirations. And as much as it pains me to say, you have a girlfriend. You do have a long-term girlfriend. You're maintaining a Magic site. You're on the A-team. Everything you have going for you. Have you given any thought to what would happen if those dreams were to come true? Like, how would you keep everything going?
I mean, the good part is that I'm really good friends with Alex Hain and John Stern. So the cool thing about if I did make the team, make the Pro Tour rather, is that I would have a team that would help me with all the testing, with all the draft strategy. So that would definitely be a big push despite my hectic schedule. Mm-hmm. But it has been on my mind to, at some point, if I could shape my schedule to give myself some time to take this game even more seriously, instead of doing the editing, all the background work, all the podcasting, all the content production, that I do that, you know, they sort of help my game because I'm talking about it, but I'm not testing. I'm not rigorously testing certain matchups that would be extremely helpful to me when I actually play a tournament. And, you know, that's always going to hold me back a bit, I think, from performing at my best. But despite having Pro Tour, trying to make the Pro Tour, My priorities are still to grow the site, to grow the community. Those things still come first. And obviously, to record the A-team. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could have it all, though? Or do you think you'd have to maybe cut back on something or, you know, delegate something to somebody else?
I think I do have to cut back on something. I feel a lot of tournaments I've played in the past, there's always these blatant mistakes that I feel that if I took more time to play more games, that they would just never happen. Mm-hmm. So I do play very sloppy in lots of spots that I wish I could, you know, have the practice to just eliminate. So maybe. Well, like, when I don't think I'm going to run this site forever, especially once I get married and have kids and whatnot. So, you know, it's a matter of finding the right person to pass the torch to when the time comes.
Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna tune out that part about married and kids. Like, la 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 la. I didn't hear that at all. And in my mind, you're still just young, single, KYT. Don't ruin the fantasy. So Mana Deprived has become more well known for their podcasts, it seems, than their articles. Is that something you're okay with, or are you looking to change that so that they're more equally in demand? Or do I have it wrong and they are equally popular, or the articles are more popular?
No, you have it absolutely correct. It's not like the two most so I helped Mana Deprived sort of get started and put it on the map in sort in many ways, but what really, really took it to the next level were two things: the A-team and Dirtling Around. Mm-hmm. Those are two things that you couldn't get anywhere else on any other Magic site that were extremely popular, that they define and still to this day define Mana Deprived. And without them, I wouldn't be, the site wouldn't be where it is right now. And I think I'm okay with that, because I'm not gonna ever compete with SCG and Channel Fireball in terms of pro level article because we can't afford these writers that you know deserve whatever that they're getting from their sites. And so we want to attack it differently, sort of like how Legit MTG and Gathering Magic are attacking it. They try to focus a lot more on the culture of the game. And I know talking to Stibbs, that's always been their focus, and talking to Medina as well. It's like, it's not like we're not trying to make the most competitive site out there. So I'm happy to be known for the podcast and known for the comics as we got Durf and we just got Polish Somalis back. So, and A-Team Heavy Meta, like I'm proud of the lineup that we got. We just recently got Top 8 Magic. So really, really happy. It's just like how I made Mana Deprived the Canadian, like this niche of being the top Canadian site. I'm happy to have other niches. I'm happy to call myself the best at something rather than be like a face in the crowd. Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy the Across the Table series too. I got to meet Matt Mendoza at Gen Con, and he's been doing the interview style shows too. And we were joking that he and I and Robert Martin should do like a big interview-a-thon where we get the three of us on one show, and then we all release the episode together, like a Kanye and Jay-Z thing. We all release it at once. And it sounds like a lot of fun. He has a lot of really good ideas, and I would love to work with him sometime. So he's definitely a good catch, and I'm glad you got him on.
It was just, once again, a lot of these things are just luck. And so, you know, I had no clue who this Matthew Mendoza guy was. He was emailing me, asking me, like, to give him tips of how to start a website like Mana Deprived for his local community, which at the time was Kansas City. And I'm like, who is this guy? Like, you know, I get too many emails like that. I get emails from, like, 11-year-old kids telling me to fix their deck list. And when I look at the deck list and it's nowhere near fixable, it's just like, I can't keep answering these. And so I get a ton of these emails, and I do apologize to 95% of those people that I don't answer. And I can understand why, like now when people who want to write for SCG, like they don't, you know, you don't go to them, they go to you. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for me. Like you can promote yourself all you want, but I just don't have the time to review or listen to a lot of things. But what really changed it was meeting Matt in Las Vegas, and he just came off as just the nicest guy ever. So I had to give him a chance.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you about a comment that you had made the other day on Twitter. We were talking with TSG, and somehow you guys got on the subject of MTG Cast and how some people feel that MTG Cast is not where it should be, or that there's been a bit of a decline in terms of quality and performance and things like that. And I had made the comment of, well, who can really do what MTG Cast does? You know, they're so big. Who can do that? And I don't know if you said it or TSG did, but somehow your name came up as, I could do it. Do you think that? Like, do you think that that Mana Deprived could get to the point where you could maybe be that hub for podcasts and do what MTG Cast set out to do?
So to be clear, TSG said that, and he said that I think he nominated himself.
Okay.
along with me.
Okay, but it's a compliment though. Like, I mean, it's definitely something that's cool to have someone say that about you.
Right. It's a huge compliment, and I could never pull off what MTG Cast does, because now I know, now that I've actually breached my bandwidth limit last month.
And did you?
I actually had to pay a penalty. Oof. of over $50 because of that, and I think I'm probably going to get penalized next month as well because of that until I figure out a solution. Mm-hmm. And so I know that there's a lot of cost into hosting these things, but at the same time, that was never and will never be my objective, to host every cast that I possibly could, which is what MTG Cast was. It was a home, a network that were accepting of most any cast, like 99%, if not 100 of cast, because they're not listening to the shows. They're just putting it up so that someone can just, the usage of that site is that for any random person, player, to just go to that site, search for a show that meets their needs and see a bunch of them and give them a try. So I think that's, like, people from MTG Cast can correct me, but I think that's their goal. And that will never be my goal, to have this many things. My thing is, it's just like I view podcasts sort of like articles. It's just like you pick a few that can represent your site and you move on from there. Mm-hmm. And so, but it was never like that. Like things just change really fast. Originally, it was the A-Team, and I created a legacy podcast called Crazy Talk, where I was on it as well as Medina, as well as Alex Hain, as well as my friend Frankie Richard. And so it was just cast that like I did because I didn't want to listen to other people's cast and give them the okay. And so I'm like, you know, I was one of those control freaks. It has, you know, I have to be on it or you don't get on, which is why Lansdell has been begging me for 3 years to get Horde of Notions on. but I couldn't. I'm just a control freak like that. I just need to be on or produce the show or have some part in it. Obviously, Heavy Meta changed that because Maddie just brought a lot to the table. Does a lot of graphics work and everything. And the way he markets Heavy Meta, I feel like it's a different crowd. It's a different niche than the A-Team. It's a lot more hardcore. And as you know, you've been on the show before.
Oh, so you've heard that.
Yeah. So I couldn't reject them. They just like fit some other thing. And that's why I took them on. So
do you listen to the shows on your banner?
Do I listen to Heavy Meta?
I mean, you had made a comment that, you know, with MDG Cast, they really weren't like, you know, you had indicated that maybe they weren't screening or they weren't really listening to the shows and they were just sort of taking people on board, you know, to get on and Mana Deprived. Do you listen to the shows before you decide or while they're on your...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've listened to a few Heavy Meta, but after that point, you just trust the people that make it, mm-hmm. and you just trust what you read on the Twitter feed and all the response. I mean, they got a guy to tattoo the name of their podcast on his freaking leg.
Yeah.
I mean, the A-Team will probably never be able to do that. So if there's a fan out there who's like crying that they actually have an A-Team tattoo, I'm sorry. I would love to see a picture of that. Mm-hmm. But like these guys created a brotherhood that I have never seen from any podcast, MVG podcast, period. And like when you, it's like, what am I going to do? Like kick them off the site? It's just like, no, they're just doing this amazing thing that cannot be replicated. And so I do keep track about the response, but you know, they do say controversial stuff at times. And I remember some Twitter person tweeting at me that, you know, this Heavy Meta podcast is offensive. So, you know, sometimes it's really hard for me because I don't, as a person, I think we'll get into that more deeply. I don't get offended frequently, so it's really hard. I'm terrible as a content manager. Like I didn't sign up for this job. It just happened. I don't get offended, so it's hard for me to tell if something is offensive. And if I leave something on my site that offends a lot of people, it's not because I don't care. It's because I can't tell. Mm-hmm. It's one of my weaknesses.
Right. So speaking of controversy, you are on the A-Team podcast. It is by far one of the most successful shows around. You guys are consistently in the top 10 of iTunes. You guys like to fight with limited resources on the charts where LR will be on top one day and you'll be on top one day and then they'll be number two and you'll be number two. And you guys just consistently do well in terms of popularity. But with that popularity, you guys have some really vocal critics. Like I read the comments after I listen to your show and some of the things that people say to you guys, I'm really lucky in that I have not received a lot of bad feedback for my show. Like if people don't like my show, they're certainly not telling me and they're certainly not saying it publicly where anybody would retweet it and show me. And I'd like to think I'm pretty thick-skinned, but there have been a couple shows where people have just, you know, really laid into you guys. How do you guys deal with that kind of feedback?
I mean, it's insane when for like the farewell episode, Scott sent me an email of like someone sending him a screenshot of a Facebook status about that episode. And it's like the thread is more than 20 comments long, basically criticizing.
Well, we can certainly talk about that episode. I'm just talking in general, like just everyday episodes, people always seem to find things to pick at and they're right. Not really nice about it sometimes. And I don't know how you guys are able to shrug that off like you do.
I think one of my experiences with the show was we had one really big fan, and I'm just going to name drop him, Willie G. My Prez, who was such a big fan that he called himself the A-Team Bodyguard. Now, at some point, I guess like our show had become too stale for him, and he started bagging on us, and even like wrote a blog post about how strongly he hated the show, and now he tells me he loves the show a lot, and has apologized since for the crazy angry blog post that he posted. But that experience allowed me to see that, you know, it's going to come and go. Like, you're not going to make everyone happy. And even people who are happy about your show might hate certain episodes that you do. Mm-hmm. And we've done shows where we talk about magic from minute zero to minute 120. Then there's shows where we don't talk about magic. We talk about freaking Star Wars miniatures. Mm-hmm. So what that experience has taught me is that, like, you just do what you think is good, and then the rest will work itself out. If not, then, you know, you're just not meant to podcast. Mm-hmm. So with the A-Team hitting, it's, I think it helps that the A-Team is, from every metric that I've seen, is like the number two most popular podcast. And I mean, that has to mean something. That has to mean we've been doing something right for over 100 and I think 50 episodes. We're either at that point or close to that point. We have to be doing something right, right? Like, so we just, large part of it we just ignore, but if there's a comment, if there's a criticism that gets repeated a lot and even by our hardcore fans, then we really need to take a look before the next episode. We do talk about it. We're like, look, you know, you, Jay, you're talking about Star Wars way too much. We're gonna like lower that amount. So we do adjust, and we do like take all the hateful comments to heart, and as long as they're constructive, and see what we can do about them. But for the most part, all our fans have been really great to us. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy we do get comments, because I look at a lot, when I first started, I looked at all these other podcasts and they barely ever get any comments on the site itself. They may get a few from Twitter followers, but on the site itself and on MTGcast, you just usually most, if not all podcasts get a handful. Mm-hmm. And so we're lucky that our fans are so vocal. So we embrace that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think your fans were probably the most vocal recently. You guys decided to do a farewell episode to my boss, Mr. Medina, who I adore. And that was probably the most controversial episode I've seen you guys put out. There was a lot of flack for what was said and how it was handled. Looking back on that, is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, looking at the stats and seeing how it was our most popular episode of all time, probably not. yeah, I have no opinion about that episode. That's one of those episodes where I just sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we got a lot of criticism for being sympathetic to Medina. And it was just, I think what people don't know is that before the show, like maybe a few days, we had exchanged emails. We knew that his wife was basically willing to give him another chance, and things were looking good for them to be able to work it out. So I think that may have made us more, even more sympathetic than we would have been. At the end of the day, the guy's still our friend. And though I think a lot of the things, maybe the words that Jay and Scott used were not clear and could have easily be taken out of context as they love to say about that episode, maybe be a little more clear. But I have to admit, like, for me, I did cringe a lot at some of the questions, because I don't even remember that episode, but like one or two questions were like really trying to get John to spill all the sexual details of his affair, and I was just like, ugh, I don't think John wants to answer this so publicly, especially if he wanted his wife to listen to the episode. So that's another thing that influenced the way we styled the episode, because he told us his wife was going to listen to it, that he was going to do it for her. And, you know, a lot of people are criticizing John for trying to rally up public support for him even after he cheated his wife. I mean, everyone's going to have their opinion on it, but, you know, we wanted John to give his final farewell, and I don't think I regret it. A lot of people say that it's not that we shouldn't have done an episode about it, but, you know, these are people who haven't listened to our show ever, and right. Who are they to say what my show is about? Mm-hmm. You know, we could, maybe we're a Howard Stern type show, Jerry Springer type show, you know, Maury type show or whatever, or Oprah.
Hey, now I've got the Oprah thing pegged. So you,
okay.
You get to be Howard Stern. I'll be Oprah. I think someone left me a review on iTunes and said that I was the Barbara Walters of magic.
Wow.
And I'm okay with that. So I have my niche. You can be the shock jocks. That's fine.
Right.
I actually really appreciated the episode for the fact that you didn't shy away from it. And for as long as I've been blogging, I had a WoW blog before this one, I've always rebelled against the idea of the veneer. You know, when I was doing my WoW thing, I was writing about everything. I rage quit a guild. Hell yes. I wrote about every terrible thing I did. And there were people that were like, well, aren't you a little embarrassed about this? And you really want people seeing that you're a little bit of a train wreck. And, you know, for everybody that I turned off with my shenanigans, I would attract somebody who was like, I've been there. I've wanted to tell my raid leader to fuck off. I wish I could have done that. Or, you know, I would talk about, you know, I had an issue with specking where I didn't want to spec the way that I was forced to do. And there were people that were like, God, you're kind of disrespectful. Then I'd get one person, but I would get somebody else who was like, you know, yeah, that is kind of stupid. And I was in that situation too. And people, I think people want to see honesty. They want to see people being human and people making mistakes. And I think it would have been really easy for you guys to go the, you know, John Medina will no longer be podcasting due to exhaustion, you know, some sort of PR nonsense. And I think that you guys have always been true to yourselves and you guys have always been honest with your fans. And that's what people like from you guys. And that's what people expect from you. And I think that this was the time where you really, I appreciated it. I liked the fact when Scotty said that he was offended when Medina was like, I didn't have anyone to go to. And Scotty's like, you could have come to me. And I liked the fact that, you know, Jay was trying to get rid of the sugarcoating because, you know, Medina was trying to, well, we just hugged, we were just watching TV. And Jay's like, no. you know, and Jay took me to, yeah. And Jay took me to church a couple times just because he was being very honest and he was sort of picking apart all of that pretense and that wrapping. And I just thought it was, I think that you guys were very true to yourselves in that episode and I appreciated it. So.
And we did it for the majority of our fans loved it and they wanted to hear it and they wanted to hear what John had to say. Mm-hmm. And we did that. And, you know, a lot of people might have a strong opinion against it, but I don't think I regret it. And usually we're experienced enough at this point that any controversial thing that we say, usually it just disappears after 2 weeks. Like now, like no one is really talking about the whole Medina fiasco. We move on. Yeah. We talk about something else. And I think it was important for us to do it. And a lot of people think that John did it as a publicity thing, but we can clearly see now that he's just working on his marriage. He's just tweeting about playing games with her. He's not like marketing himself or anything.
No.
He's just regular old John with his new, much more lower, like his new Twitter account that has a far less Twitter followers and just doing his thing, talking about religion stuff. He has moved on from Magic and I think he's in the stages of finalizing the sale of legit MTG. So, mm-hmm. I honestly think he did it for his wife and not so that everyone could just rain down in the comments section with praise. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
But see, I got the feeling you guys were onto something when I was again seeing the comments and there were people that were saying, I was cheated on, I've been there, or I did cheat, mm-hmm. and I've been there. And that's what I like to see. I like seeing just human, real life. And it is ugly sometimes, mm-hmm. and it is messy. And I've cheated. I cheated on my boyfriend 5 years ago that I was with, and I did it. And, you know, we all have things that are unseemly that we've done, but I feel like I relate to people more when they're flawed and they make mistakes, you know, and they don't, you know, I don't feel like they're better than me. And I dig that. And I feel like, again, that's what people connected to was I've been there. And I think people needed to hear that. So I will say that one thing that bothered me about the criticism is, like you said, people who either had never listened to the show or people who themselves aren't angels. Like Jordy Tate. How is Jordy Tate's marriage doing? Like, do we need to go there? Because I'll go there. He's not in his own utopia. So that bothered me. And then Nina, who I love, God bless her. But Nina, for Nina to say that anything is inappropriate, you've made a career out of being inappropriate. Like, you don't get to judge. And that bothered me more than anything, was seeing people who themselves are flawed. And we love them for being flawed. But then for them to come out and judge someone else was just like, you don't have a case. Like, you know, like, I was really amazed at just the people who alone, you know, they've made mistakes too. And that's really what blew me away. Like, I wasn't really caring about a lot of the criticism until I saw people like that come forward. And it's like, you need to sit down. Like, take a couple of seats down, because no.
Yeah. I saw things get pretty heated with you, so on Twitter, it was interesting.
And yeah, I just thought that was really hypocritical, because I know that, I cheated. I mean, I can't judge the guy. I'm a cheater. I was a cheater, you know, and I make mistakes. My mistakes, you can still go on my WoW blog and see the things that I've done, and I had no business to judge that man at all, and I knew that, and...
Like, the one thing that people were really rallying behind was just the fact that Jay said, you were not the cause of your affair. And, I mean, I guess, I mean, that could easily be construed as victim blaming at that point. But to me, it's like there's just many factors. A lot of us who have not, it's not just like that it's the woman's fault or anything. It's just that a lot of us don't cheat because we weren't presented with the situation or the scenario or the possibility of cheating. Like, John basically had a woman that was, I guess, really attractive, that he was friends with before and dated before, and was coming on to him via texting, and that thing escalated. And like, if she didn't come on to him, like, I guess an affair never would have happened. And I think that's what, at least I took away from what Jay was trying to say. That's me saying that in a more elaborate way. I just think there's a lot of factors beyond that that just like influence or like, I've never been put in a position where I could cheat, so I can't really say when push comes to shove, if like the most beautiful woman walks up to me, like, what's going to happen, right? Like, I'm going to tell you that nothing's going to happen because I love my girlfriend. But that situation is going to test a lot of people.
Again, I'm just going to la 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 la, because you had me up until that. I love my, well, la 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 la. So you're spoiling the fantasy. But no, I understand completely what you're saying. And so then came the business of replacing Medina. And for a while there was a lot of speculation. You guys were tossing out some hints. A lot of names were tossed about. Alex Hain was one of them. People joked around about Lansdell. Lansdell did the trolling bit. I was scared shitless when I heard that. I was like, no, no, no. I just wasn't having it. And there were a lot of names that were tossed about. And you guys eventually settled on Jeremy, formerly of Monday Night Magic. What led to you guys picking him out of all the candidates?
I mean, Jay is a very picky person. And so it took a lot of pushing from me and Scott, who felt Medina, when Smitty left, it took a lot of convincing from us that every episode of Medina was guest star. We had a fantastic episode. So, and Kyle agreed. And so eventually Jay relented and we got him on. So this time around, it was just as hard as every person that we brought up. Jay was like, who the fuck is this guy? What has he done? Or what has she done? And this person could have done something relevant. Like, I think I mentioned, you know, John Stern as a host, but as a guest. And he'd be like, who the fuck is that guy? I'm like, we just had him a few weeks ago, Jay. He won Grampy Atlantic City. He's one of the top Canadian players in the country. He actually gave you advice. You asked him for personal advice on your hexproof list, and you don't even remember this guy's name? Like, this is retarded. So Scott and I just, like, spitball a bunch of names, and Jay was like, nope, 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 nope. And Schofield, once we mentioned Schofield, since Schofield lives in Alberta, I guess that's why He knew about him, and he was great on the show that we had. And it's someone that all three of us have not only met, but I think even Kyle has met him, but has also gone along with, also has podcast experience, was a co-host for Monday Night Magic, and even started his own solo news, like Magic News podcast. I don't know how far he went. He did like one or two episodes, but that shows initiative. That shows that he wanted to do something more than just be a Magic player. He wanted to contribute to the community. So that was a big plus. And besides, his sense of humor, that's key. Like a lot of people, like the A-Team is a very specific type of humor, and you've got to be willing to go out there.
Yeah.
And say certain things. You don't have to say anything if you're me, but we can't have another me, so we went with Jeremy, and Jeremy's just a great guy. We did have other candidates. Did we really consider Lansdell? No way, because dating him would just not happen. Mm-hmm. I think, but when he did do that bit with us, it definitely showed that he definitely has chemistry.
It was funny. I gotta give it to him.
Right. He definitely has chemistry with Scott and I. Mm-hmm. Very strong chemistry, I think, but not with Jay. So we had to pick someone that fit everything. And Jeremy, I think, actually fits the bill in all the areas that we needed.
Can you say who some of the other candidates were?
So I think Scott was just spitballing. He's always wanted, like when we picked Medina, he's always wanted to see if we could get someone like pro level. Mm-hmm. So he's always thrown the name of AJ Soccer, and we've had him a bunch of times, and he loves to be on the A-Team. But from our perspective, we didn't want someone that was that much better than us in competitive Magic to just like, because we want a discussion, right? We don't want someone to just tell us what's right and what's wrong.
Sure.
And so we thought like someone that is just like way too high would just make the show terribly unbalanced. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of people. I don't know how serious it was. We never really considered Alex.
He was my first choice.
He's a close friend of mine, and everyone would love his insight, but he doesn't fit the entertainment vibe of the A-Team. Mm-hmm. With Crazy Talk, the entertainment bit for most people who listened to him was him bickering with John Medina and saying mama jokes. Your mama's so fat that, like, we were just bringing it, like, way back on that show. And, there were other candidates here and there, but nothing that, like, Jeremy was the clear favorite just because Jay knew him. All three of us have actually met him, interacted with him in real life, and loved him, and that was it. So he was snapped to pick. Like even Kyle, he was even on Kyle's list. He was the only person on all four of our lists, so easy choice.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's been received pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I have to ask you, because when Medina was on my show, I asked him, what do I need to do to get on the A-Team? Because Medina told me that all I had to do was have all my followers send you tweets with hashtag more Campbell, and eventually you guys would crack and have me on. Is that true?
That is not true. Because
lies.
Because Jay will do the what has this person done for me lately type thing every time. Like every time I send, like, I'm tentative to send an email to the A-Team group because I know what the response is. Like, you basically have to write exactly, like, the biography of why this person needs to be on, why this person is important, and why you think this person is entertaining for the show. And that just takes too much effort, so I say fuck it, and we just try to wing it and pick whatever guests that we can. But like I don't know why Jay feels like we've brought on people that have done nothing, mm-hmm. Who have not won anything. So, but at some point his taste got a little more strict. So
interesting.
You know, we haven't had a guest. In fact, that's funny because we haven't had a guest in ages. Mm-hmm. We had a string of episodes where we just had like Reed Duke, Jerry Thompson, Connelly Woods, Owen. We had all the big names, and we even had Raptor. I can't believe we got him on.
Yeah.
Like some of these people that we've gotten on, It's like, did they hear how like, do they know how controversial the A-Team is to a lot of people? But they accept it, which we really appreciate. Like, Reed Duke's a big friend of the show who's been on multiple times, and so despite our controversy, we still, like, people aren't scared to come on or anything.
Cool. It's
But to be
interesting.
honest with you, I think the Deck Tees fans could help you out. I think the Deck Tees army, if you want Aaron to come on, can. But Jay Boosh is probably the account that you're gonna have to tweet at, and he's probably gonna tweet back like, "Who?"
Or I
So.
can, I have this figured out. If I can't be on the A team, then I'll bring the A team to me. So like, I'll just have you guys on one at a time, pick your brains, and then I can officially say that I've sort of been on the A team. I was in their brains for a moment, and that'll be my way of living the dream. So
You'll get Jay on, and he'll be like, "Who is this?" This
I
person.
like Jay. I respect Jay because Jay and I have a lot in common in that we are the mouthy, offensive friend who really has your back and who has the heart of gold and who, when you can sort of get through that, that image or that veneer, we really are looking out for you. And I found myself agreeing with, going back to the farewell episode, a lot of what Jay said, because I would have said those things and I'm that friend. And, but at the same time, I think Jay's also somebody that I could have a hell of a fight with and he could throw down and it'd be a good time. And, he doesn't seem like somebody
Could
who,
get pretty ugly.
but I like that though. I respect people who don't let me walk all over them. Because if you let me walk all over you, I'm going to walk all over you. And Jay's somebody who I think could really put me in my place and be like, bitch, we ain't doing this. And I like that because people don't often stand up to me. And I think he's somebody who I'd have a hell of a time with. And I respect the guy. So he's somebody I'd love to. I've talked about it before where I would love to have you on individually and Scotty on individually and Jeremy on a bit, individually. And I would love to just take you all on, one by one, get inside your heads a little bit. And I think you all individually have a lot to say. So I think it'd be fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So if anybody has enjoyed listening to you on my show, Car Young Tom, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Oh, well, you can contact me at kyt@manandeprived.com. But like I said on the show, if I don't reply, it's not it's because I don't like your face or I don't like you. I just don't have the time. But you can try, just make some crazy title. Like, really want
Fold me like
Asian
a
man or
wonton.
something. Something like that. And other than that, manandeprived.com is my home, and leave comments. I've been doing more drafts and draft videos. So, that's my home, and you can find me on Twitter at KYT Magic, and feel free to add me on Facebook or Google Plus. I'll be happy to add you guys back.
Okay, well, it has been absolutely a joy having you on my show, KYT. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I would love to have you back on again.
Thank you for having me,
Es
Aaron.
especially when you lose the girlfriend, just,
Yeah,
And if anyone else is listening to the show and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. You can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to download the show, subscribe, leave me a review, some stars, a thumbs up. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. The show's Twitter account is at the Deck Tees if you want just podcast news without a side of me. Or if you want to reach out to me directly, you can find me through email. You can drop me a note at estrus@elitistrix.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye-bye.